Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. And got to give you a little disclaimer. I'm doing the show on the road. They got great equipment, a little bit echoey in the studio. So if you hear a little bit of echoes, bear with me. And in recognition of that, we're flipping up the script a little bit this week. For those of our new listeners in Dallas, you probably haven't heard us do this before, but every once in a while, we try to do interviews. I try to do at least 2 to 3 a month. Sometimes we get one a week, which is what I love to do because I love interviewing other practitioners, other guys that manage money, people that are looking at things in different ways. This business is all about perspectives, and I think the more perspectives you can get, and the more people's eyes you can look through, right? The more, if you can walk a mile in their shoes and see things from their side of it. I just can't tell you how many times I've gotten great investment ideas or great pieces of advice from these interviews. And I manage money professionally, so hopefully it does the same for you. So anyway, what we do every once in a while is we'll air a part of that interview on the show, 10 to 15 minutes usually. And that's what we're going to do today. A, because I think that this guy, and the guy's name is Tony Greer. He runs a macro research, trading investment research newsletter and subscription service. Tony has been a trader on the floor of the COM, the CBOE. He has been a floor trader on the New York Stock Exchange. I believe he traded on the floor of the exchange back in the day. He's worked for hedge funds. He's got a great rudimentary understanding of the plumbing of the system being a trader, and he's also a great macro thinker and really does his homework, and he's been a big value add to us. And as I was saying in the 3-minute warm-up to the show that only airs here in Seattle, the reason I like Tony, well, first of all, he's very good at what he does. Second of all, he's not a guy that's stuck on himself, right? One of the things I try to look for is really smart guys that don't have egos. And the reason why is this game is so hard as it is, especially in this market. Egos are expensive, and in every way, you got to make allowances for them, right? And the guys that I want to get to are just the practitioners, the guys that are just the workhorses. We want to talk to workhorses, not show horses, right? And he's very much that way. I'll also say this. I don't think that I know of anybody who has done a better job riding both sides of the ups and downs of the last 2 years. And I'll use us as an example. We've done a wonderful job managing the downside. We haven't been as aggressive to the upside. Overall, we've done a good job, especially on a risk-adjusted basis. But managing both sides of it is very difficult. And Tony is one of the best at doing that. So anyway, it's going to be a really good interview, and hopefully you guys will learn from it as much as I've learned from Tony over the years. But anyway, let's get to the market update. So really not a whole lot going on. I think that this is actually going to be the second week in a row that we've closed red. Not meaningfully, very small, but that is something to pay attention to. Like we've said for a while, this market feels very, very tired. That to me does not mean impending doom as far as market direction. But it certainly could, especially when you look at, again, the valuation picture is more insane. You're watching, it's seemingly more and more every day, more and more of the bubble type action that we're seeing in cryptos moving 120% in a day, going up 800-900% or whatever over the course of a month or two. Watching stocks just unapologetically break from fundamentals and be speculative vehicles. Buffett spoke recently and said this market's more like a casino than at any other time he's seen in his career. I mean, all the hallmarks are there, but we have to look under the surface, right? Have the conditions changed? And the answer is no. So what do you have to be? And what I mean by, do you have the conditions changed? Has this giant tidal wave of liquidity, i.e. just money, pumping into the system, as it slowed down? Has it ebbed? Not at all. Is it going to? No. If anything, it's going to come hotter in the second half of the year. And that's, this is one of those really tough, dangerous things to understand about this market. When you're doing what they're doing, the market is responding to liquidity, not fundamentals, certainly not interest rates. And as absurd and as obscene as that can look at times, you've got to sit there and look for, are those conditions going to change? Right? Because it's sort of the inverse of insanity, doing the exact same thing, expecting a different result, right? If they keep pumping the liquidity and you just keep running all this liquidity into the markets, why all of a sudden would you expect markets to break? It hasn't happened yet. And I think you can see these short bouts of volatility, but at the end of the day, think of liquidity is a great word for it, right? You turn on the faucet, the water has to go somewhere. And, you know, the best receptacle, bar none, over the last 15 years has been the S&P and the NASDAQ. At some point, that will quit being the case. But I think that what you've got to look for, at least for my eyes, in this marketplace, like we've been saying for a while, you got to keep your eyes on liquidity. And what's amazing is they're already talking rate cuts, which is fascinating because... The economy has not met any of the metrics. You know, I saw one guy saying, yes, it has. If you pull housing information out of the inflation rate, then we're at this level. And you go, wait, pull housing out? But why would you do that? Any metric we're looking at for inflation that does not include food, fuel, and housing, get out of here. Right, if the Fed wants to look at metrics like that, non-inflationary periods of times when CPI is running at 1.9 to 2.1, okay, that's fine. I can understand that giving you a different look through the economy, right? Looking at it from a different perspective, you can glean some more information. But when you're battling record housing inaffordability, and you're looking at inflation metrics that exclude housing, housing's kind of a big deal. It's the number one expense every household pays every month. Like, so this is the insane, I mean, you see it all over the culture we're in, right? People saying ridiculous things, but that's one of the things that I'm encouraging people to be, hey, be worried, because the insanity exists in the financial world too. We're citing metrics of inflation that don't include housing data when housing is at record in affordability. That's like looking at a car that's on empty driving down the freeway and you're like, well, yeah, but it handles great. You shouldn't worry about the fuel. You're like, well, yeah, but we're on empty. This is kind of a critical thing at this moment. Agreed, the alignment of the car, the acceleration might be phenomenal. The airbags, beautiful. Look at the size of those tires. At the same time, none of that really matters in the next 20 minutes, because the issue that should be at the foremost of our attention is the fact that we're running out of gas. Right? And it kind of takes us back to that whole booming economy narrative that you're going to continue to hear over and over and over, for political reasons, for just simple idiocy reasons, for the fact that the majority of people like to, you know, people say that I'm negative sometimes. I'm really not. You can't run a business or be an investor for a living and be a negative person. I'm not a cynic. I am a skeptic, right? I don't believe every bit of, just every time somebody comes in and starts flapping their gums, I'm not going to take it as gospel. But I mean, I would call that discernment. I wouldn't call it cynicism. But no, you're going to hear, and so many people are Pollyannish, right? It's like, no, tell me why it's good. I've just never understood that. I'm like, man, if there's a bullet coming at me, I'd like to know about it. Right? Do I want to know about the good too? Yeah, absolutely. But the good things sort of end up taking care of themselves. In life, I've found that keeping an eye on the risk and the bad outcomes seems to make a little more sense. I tell that to our employees all the time. I'm like, hey, don't worry about what we're doing good. I don't need you to be freaked out about what you're doing good. The secret sauce, the improvement, right? All the upward mobility is in figuring out what's wrong. Anyway, I take that same view to look at the economy. I want to know what's going on. I don't want to listen to somebody's bullish narrative, and I don't want to listen to somebody that sounds smart tell me why the whole world's about to end. I want to listen to both, and I want to have a good grasp and understanding of what's going on. So as it relates to the booming economy narrative, I think this week provides another perfect example of just the, I'm not even sure what the right word to use is, right? The ridiculous nature of the narrative, the booming economy, okay? What did we see? And again, this is just a macrocosm. It's just 1 week's data. But again, I think it paints a really clear picture. So you had hot PPI data, which is producer price index, which is basically a look through, I believe it chases here. Oh, the other thing too, guys, real quick. Sorry on the daily dots. Chasing, this is on me. I didn't do a very good job coordinating this. But I had an unplanned for business trip that I had to take at the last minute. Chase happens to be on vacation. And so we missed a couple of the dots the last 2 days. So anyway, we will be back. We're not ending the dots. I was in meetings all day during the close of markets. Didn't have time to be able to get it up. Chase is on vacation with the fam, which he needed to take some time off as well. But anyway, the dots are going to keep rolling. But anyway, let's get back to the economic data. You got hot PPI, which means that basically it's the input cost to manufacturing, right? Material costs, that kind of stuff. But then you also had weaker than expected consumer sales, right? It's a conflicting deal. Why do I say that this is a perfect macrocosm of the economy? Or microcosm rather. I say it because the PPI price data makes sense because consumption is still high on the consumer level and you've got a lot of institutional type of construction, right? Onshoring of factories, things like that going on, things that would put pressure on the PPI, the producer price index. So that makes sense. At the same time, in conflict with a booming economy narrative, you got weaker than expected retail sales. Not horrible. Why do I think that's important? Because it points to exactly what we're talking about. Which is why I throw out both opinions, because I think they're nonsensical. This isn't a booming economy. Right? It is an economy when you look at it from every angle. It is an economy that, yes, it's got above trend growth, and that above trend growth via inflation is putting a lot of pressure and inflicting a lot of pain on consumer balance sheets, or especially on their consumer income statements, their monthly budgets, right? That isn't a booming economy. That's an economy that is struggling with inflation. It's also not an economy on the tip on the cusp of collapse either. Now, I would hate to see what kind of shape this economy was in if you weren't running 7% deficits. And guys, that's the key, and you're going to keep hearing me pound this. 7% does not sound like a lot, but it's double the average. And the only other time in our history where we ran deficits this large was World War II, when we were saving the world from Nazi Germany and establishing ourselves as the financial and military superpower of the world, i.e. the money we were spending in World War II was going to pay fantastic dividends. This ain't that. 7%. So you're running $2.5 trillion deficits, but Biden just proposed a $7.3 trillion budget. You're going to be looking at $2.5 to $3 trillion deficits going forward. You're tacking on a trillion every 100 days. So if you think about it, you've got an economy, right, growing at supposedly 3.5%, somewhere in that ballpark, if you average the last three quarters together. Okay? So what if you normalize deficits? You took them from 7% down to 2.5 to 3. You'd be in recession right now. Probably pretty ugly one, too. So that's why now, does that say no, because there's no constraint on we're already paying the inflation price and we're going to continue to pay it. I'll just continue to tell people, if your whole thing is they got to slow down spending to stop inflation, that isn't going to happen. Don't hold your breath. Honestly, don't, because that ain't happening. And guys, that's the tough nature of where we're at. But I think that's why it's so important that we have crystal clear thinking and we approach this as skeptics, not cynics. But we sit there and acknowledge, yes, the stock. Do you see what I'm saying? There's just a big thing there different in an investor's mind of going, well, markets are going up and times are great, versus, yeah, things are going up. I understand why they're going up, but I don't trust why they're going up, because what it means is I'm being forced to buy assets that are not tied to fundamentals, but they are going up because of something the government is doing. So I need to be very cautious, meaning I need to take advantage of this while they continue to spend like drunk sailors. But I also need to keep reality in my mind at all times, because the rug pull can happen at any minute. And then you also look back at the history of inflationary times. They tend to be very volatile, right? You get these euphoric peaks where it looks like inflation's coming to an end and everything's going to be great. And then inflation ramps up again. Market gets hammered. Rates go up further. This is kind of the things. And it's the way inflation works. It ebbs and it flows. It's sort of like Freddy Krueger in a movie, right? You think you got him killed three or four times, and the guy just keeps coming back from the dead. It's like the vampire of economics. You got to drive a stake through the thing's bloody heart, right? And I just keep, I continue seeing that. I don't think that you see any downward pressure, because like we've been saying, you're so far down the road now economically. And that's the other thing, and I say it all the time, but people really need to understand that. Remember, so every time we interact, every time we intervene, every time the market steps in and bails out banks like it did last year with $350 billion in the bank term funding plan, every time we do that, what we're basically doing is pushing reality off further, right? Because these crises that hit, they're not crises. They're chickens coming home to roost, right? The bank situation last year was a perfect example of this. There wasn't some disaster that happened. Because of zero interest rate policy, ZERP, that we ran for essentially 15 years coming out of 08-09, all banks were loaded to the gills with bonds paying low interest rates. When inflation became a problem and rates went up, those bonds were going to get hammered. Do you see what I'm saying? This wasn't a rogue wave. This was an eventuality. It was something that we've been talking on this radio show for 8 to 9 years. It's been something that we've developed our bond replacement strategy for over the last 10 years. A, we didn't want to be there to get our heads lopped off and take a 25 to 30% hit on our bond portfolio. But more importantly, over the course of the last 10 years, i.e. risk management, we also didn't want to sit there and make less than the inflation rate, charging our clients to make less than the inflation rate, sitting on bonds, waiting for them to take a 25 to 30% haircut like they did in 2022. And even more of a haircut last year. Right? And that's that risk management thinking that's a perfect example, I think, of how we should be looking at this environment. Do we need to be involved? Yeah. Do I think things are going to go higher? Yeah. Do I think it means all things are safe and Katie barred the door and things look great and by no stretch of the imagination? No. And that's the tough thing about these environments. That's what makes inflationary environments tough to navigate. Normally, we're worried about one thing or the other, inflation or deflation. In this scenario, because central banks have been effectively pushing off reality for 15 years, and let me get back to that. That's why they'll have to continue to do it. Right? Because the longer you push reality off, the bigger that reality check becomes. Right, you didn't get rid of any of that. And so every time you interact, you're pushing reality further away, further and further away from the present state. Which means that that dose of reality, if and when you finally are forced to get out of the way and just, right, let it play out, that weight's getting bigger. And so where you started off trying to quote unquote or shield the economy from the quote unquote rogue wave that was 08-09, now you've got to protect the economy effectively from the artificial stimulus you've pumped in from the last 15 years. Right? Because if they quit doing it, it's the perfect analogy is a drunk or an addict. An alcoholic is the perfect analogy, meaning when you get a really intoxicated alcoholic, you've got to wean them slowly off alcohol because their body becomes dependent on it. And so quitting becomes an existential threat. The same is true with central bank intervention. And it might take longer to play out, But the same is true, because if you just think about what central banks do, they step in to push off the pains of today, right? The eventual consequences of the choices we're making. But they didn't fix anything. They just papered over and pushed it further out into the future. And we have to keep our eyes on that, because that's going to be the tail of the tape, guys, over the next 5 to 10 years. It's how you successfully navigate an inflationary market, how you stay in the right things that will benefit you over through a serious bout of inflation, and how you avoid getting sucked into the siren song and a lot of the crypto stuff is like that right now. Right, the argument behind it sounds sound. Right, it's inflation. These are anti-inflationary. Right, there are, but when I look at it in reality, I think there are probably only two cryptocurrencies that I would bet on, and I would still bet on those extraordinarily conservatively. It'd be Ethereum and Bitcoin, but I think the rest of it will prove to be shiny objects that end up costing most people a lot more money than they end up making most people. It's just a classic bubble trade, right? It's the old trading sardine adage. And so at the end of the day, guys, it comes down to risk management. It really does. And people will say, well, you're preaching your book. Well, no, I'm not preaching my book, but the way we run our book is because of, this is why we run our book this way. You know, if you want to look out at the world today, you're like, everything looks rosy to me. Hey, then you don't need risk management. Great. But if you're looking out at the world today and you're going, look, I see what he's talking about. I notice how expensive the overall stock market is. I realize that if I'm just sitting in the overall stock market, I'm more exposed to really overpriced companies than I ever have been. I also know that, like, it's not really the stock market. It's 40% of my money's in 10 companies. And those companies are really over. If you're seeing all these issues, and if you're listening to this radio show, chances are you probably are. Okay, but what do you do about it? You recognize there's a problem, but you haven't made a change. Make a change. Take a step down. Again, I'll say this all the time, especially for those getting ready for retirement. You just rode the biggest, longest, largest bull market in U.S. history right to the front door of your retirement. For God's sakes, take some risk off the table. Let's think about financing the rest of your life. Let's quit dreaming about tripling and quadrupling our money from here, which, hey, I'm not saying we can't do it, but it's not what the priority should be. The priority should be financing the rest of your life. The priority should be insulating your assets and your net worth from a reckless government that is spending like a whole ship full of drunken sailors. That should be the priority. Risk management, making sure that we don't blow a hole in the beautiful retirement that has been built over the last 15 years. And if that interests you, which it should, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. Follow me on Twitter, at KYR Radio. We're going to come back and do one more segment, and then I'm going to air a part of the interview. You're not going to want to miss this interview, so I'm only going to air the first 10 to 15 minutes. We got one more segment coming up first. This will be the last segment. But this guy has been dead on the money. He's a buddy of mine, and he's really smart. You're going to want to listen to the whole thing. Even if you're managing money at home, this is stuff that you can do. Like I've always said, do I want you to call us? Yes, but I want you to be able to use the show regardless. So anyway, got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stick with us through the break. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
2024 has the potential to be a wild ride. Are you confident your portfolio is protected? Risk management has never been more important. Join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his 2024 Outlook live webinar, Thursday, March 28th.
Todd, with the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, and this crazy market volatility, protecting retirement portfolios has never been more critical, and it's our number one focus.
Don't just ride out 2024. Join Zach for his live webinar and learn how they actively manage every portfolio.
We do it with Bulwark's risk management strategy, always seeking opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give you as much upside as possible.
Don't miss Zach's free 2024 Outlook live webinar, Thursday, March 28th, Register now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. All right. So, hello, darkness, my old friend. Whenever Boeing comes up, that song comes into my mind. Hello, darkness, my old friend. I'm probably in the wrong key there. Again, and we've talked about this before, but with all the stuff about Boeing in the news, I'm not trying to stick my chest out and parade around about how I was right. I am fully aware of the things I get right, and I'm fully aware of the things that I get wrong. So just since I was one of the guys that thought, well, and I said this, I said, hey, I don't think there's any way that a recession isn't happening at some point in 2023. And if I'm wrong, it's going to change the way we manage money. Well, I was wrong. It changed the way we manage money. Didn't change our philosophy, made us implement some new strategies that go along with our existing philosophy. But I'm not saying this. I'm not, you know, me and my buddies joke around about the fact that we're the only people on Twitter that ever get a trade wrong. So this is not me bragging about yet another correct call, but it is one that I think that we can learn a lot from. And I think it really reemphasizes a part of research that I have not really heard people talk about, because the funny thing is when you get in raging bull markets, people don't really need to do research. They do what I like to refer to as hindsight research, right? Meaning they do research that reinforces the reasons that they bought stocks for too expensive of prices. That's usually what it comes at, right? They rather than doing research, they try to come up with justifications to own things that they know they probably shouldn't. And one of the things that you see happen later in cycles, I've got an old saying, which is at the top of markets or at the top of cycles, everybody is a technical trader, meaning they're all reading the charts. Why? Because markets have gone up for so long and they're looking for, and at market bottoms, everybody's a value investor. Right? Well, because they just got their teeth kicked in and now they're looking at the fundamentals, right? Now they're trying to really know what they own. We try to be a value investor. We try to be a fundamental investor all the time, because the biggest thing that we need to avoid is getting kicked in the teeth, risk management, right? And I think the lesson in Boeing, and I think if one thing that you can learn or that we can learn from that, and I had somebody ask me for this. I recently posted an interview that we did on Boeing, or a show I did on Boeing, a special I did on Boeing on March 1st of 2019. And I actually put it on Twitter. I don't know if I posted. Somebody was looking for it, and I gave that to them on Twitter this last week. So anyway, if you want to get on my Twitter account, I can repost it. It's at KYR Radio. But I'm not encouraging you to listen to it because of the fact that I was right. The reason I'm encouraging you to listen to it is I think that when you pay the right attention to things, when researching stocks, it can make you look clairvoyant when in fact the truth was right there for anybody to see if they just took the time to look. And all too often, researching a company is just listening to what the CEO says, right? And think about it. What is the CEO? He's the chief cheerleader, right? When you want to understand a company, and I'll just tell you this right now, when you want to understand a company, what you really want to try to do is you want to get to like the senior executive level and the mid-level manager level. That's been my experience. If I can talk to several senior executives and also several mid-level managers, because your best intel from the ground up is going to come from the mid-level manager. Okay. But a lot of times you can tell how well a company is managed with how well in sync that middle-level manager is to senior executives. All right, so I'm always going to go with the mid-level manager's word, especially if I can get multiple of them to confirm certain things. But management, focusing on a management. And again, people, I listen to the CEO. That's not management. It really isn't when you think about it. It's an overseer. And it's a cheerleader. And usually it's the guy that's got his income most tied to the performance of the underlying stock. That's another reason why in Boeing's case, I was really interested in listening to the mid-level managers. Why? Because the overwhelming percentage of their income comes from their salary. So they're going to tell you things that would be concerning to the price of the stock, but would be good for the company. Right? Let me give you an example. when we started, one of the first things that raised my eyebrows about Boeing was the multiple and completely corroborative stories that I was hearing regarding maintenance being passed by. Whether it was broken HVAC systems on the factory floors, elevators that didn't work, roofs that needed repairing, that they were pushing off far beyond their planned cycle of doing it. And remember, when you push off, when you're deferring out costs, they always get bigger. Right? It's you know, when you delay maintenance on a building for 3 years, you know for a fact it's going to cost you more in 3 years. The question is how much? And when you focused on the management at Boeing and didn't just listen to the Jim Cramers of the world interviewing the CEO, that made it sound like they'd just all of a sudden turned this big old lazy, you know, dormant industrial into this profit machine, and all these things they wanted to believe. And if you believed him at the time, and I said this at the time, I said, one of the things that's very hard for me to wrap my head around about this whole bullish Boeing, this isn't a new company. And they're not doing something new. They're making airplanes, right? They're manufacturing airplanes. So if you want me to believe that this new management team has all of a sudden unlocked all this profitability and value out of this company, then I have to simultaneously believe that every management team that came before them were a bunch of idiots. And I know for a fact that's not the case. Alan Mulally was nobody's fool. And then he replicated what he did at Boeing and went on to do it at Ford. Or wait, did he come from Ford? Anyway, he's got a stellar track record. So I know that's not the case. So then you start talking to people. You actually do research rather than listening to the head cheerleader. You start seeking out some senior executives. You start seeking out some senior engineers that actually worked on designing the MAX. You ask them these questions. And what did I hear over and over? I heard about cost deferral, management having no idea what they were doing, not following typical Boeing protocols, like everything must be double and triple redundancy. That was the first thing, the first flag that you have not heard anybody address. And guys, it freaks me out that guy that was the whistleblower on Boeing, I just listened to an interview of somebody that knows, family friend or something like that, that he'd spoken to, and he said, she said, are you worried? And he said, no, but if anything happens to me, I didn't kill myself. And I'm not alleging that anybody, I don't want to get into that business. I'm not alleging that anybody did anything. I'm just saying, if you listen to that interview of that guy, everything he's saying, everything I have heard from multiple sources. And I was talking about it in 2019. And, you know, the fact that the government didn't address that when the MAX came out, right? When you guys know this story, or for our listeners in Texas are new, maybe you don't, but they were just using the same chassis, the 737 airframe. But they want to make it way more efficient, which means they needed bigger engines, which means they needed to move the wings back further, which means they had to do a plane redesign on that same chassis, which means it was going to change the flight characteristics of that plane. So to compensate for that, they installed the software system, the MCAS system. And the standard package came with only one instrument collecting data. So collecting airspeed data and things like that to feed the software system. Well, the minute I heard that, I stopped and went, wait a second, that can't be right. And they go, what do you mean? And I go, that's insane. That means if that one sensor goes down, the software system doesn't work. Boeing doesn't do that. They pioneered double and triple redundancy. And the engineer's looking at me and going, yeah, that's exactly what we said, Zach. They're just doing it to save money. You can get a second sensor if you pay the upgrade. That's insanity. Do you know why we have double and triple redundancy? Because if you don't, people die. They knew that. They're not stupid. There's probably a math equation they could do and say, hey, if we only use one sensor, we will lose X amount more planes. And if they don't have that equation, I guarantee you they do. I bet you it's not that hard of an equation to run. But my whole point is, if you're listening to the CEO and the Boeing cheerleader or any stock cheerleaders, right? They think of it like an NFL team. Let's say we're an NFL coach. And we want to go scout a team. Should we go find the people that like dye their hair that team's color and wear the jerseys? No, they're not going to give you a biased answer. I mean, we'll listen to what they have to say, but I mean, you know, they're like, oh, this guy's great and this guy, but you're not going to, what are you, you're going to go do the film. You're going to go talk to other teams that have played them. You're going to talk to your players that played with a few of the guys in college. Right? Why? Because you want unbiased stuff from people that know what they're talking about. And all too often in stocks, we run to the celebrity types like Jim Cramer, who have been proven wrong over and over and over again, and clearly do not do deep research. Or we go to the CEO, the guy that's incentivized to drive the price of the stock up. And look at Muhlenberg. Look at the CEO of Boeing. He left with a net worth in excess of $100 billion. Big slap on the wrist he got, right? So I think the big lesson to glean from all this is that, A, you go back and listen to the show, all of this stuff was happening. I even said more planes are going to fall. Why? Just because you knew what they were doing. And here's the tough thing. The price of Boeing stock, when I made that comment, I think it was right at an all-time high. And if not, it was really close. And that reason alone made a lot of people not want to sell it. And that's the other tough thing that we've got to think about. This is why it's so important in these bull market bubble type mentalities. And Boeing's the perfect example. Everybody was buying into the narrative. And you're watching the stock go up, which is confirming to you that the narrative's correct, when all you had to do was just look under the hood. And you knew that this was going to happen. Why? Because it's the natural law of things. Show me management that is only focused on stock price, and I'll show you management that is shirking their other responsibilities, and those other balls are going to drop. Why? Because it's hard enough to keep those balls in the air when you're focused on them. Running a corporation like Boeing isn't easy. And if you're focused on the stock price, I can guarantee you're not focused on the rest of the business. By default, you can't serve two masters. And so much of this pain, we can sidestep, we can avoid. And it's a form of risk management, right? Why do we dig into stuff? Why do we actively manage portfolios with individual stocks? Even most people think that's more risky. Because I'm not buying a bucket of a bunch of things I don't know. I know everything that's in the portfolio. Does it guarantee it's a win? No, but it guarantees I'm not sitting on a landmine. It guarantees that I'm not sitting on a stock that's going to blow up my portfolio. That is nothing like I think it is. That's a sham. Right? That's another part of it. And why? So we don't lose. It's like Buffett says, right? The first three rules to managing other people's money. Rule number one, don't lose money. And rules two and three are C rule number one. And why does he say that? Because if we manage risk and avoid the losses, the returns over the long time take care of themselves. And managing the downturns is how we outperform. The less we lose, the less we need to make. It works. Takes patience. It means that sometimes you got to sit on the side of the party and watch everybody act like an idiot and exercise a little bit of discipline. But how many times in our lives have we all faced that? And yet when it comes to investing, it's the one part where we're like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, just extrapolate this over into other things you've learned in life. When it all looked too good and everybody was making too much money and idiots and, you know, it's like 08, 09. It's funny because we can all do this in certain ways, except when it comes to investing. When we were watching kids that were making 40 grand a year, and I remember this, making 40 grand a year, carrying $1 million to $1.25 million worth of mortgage notes. And look, the funny thing is I know a lot of you at that time are like, this is insane. Housing market can't go up. But then we put that bubble in the stock market and everybody's like, well, yeah, but the market keeps going up. It's the same thing, guys. Does it make sense to you? And if it doesn't, there's probably something wrong. Probably needs you need some risk management. Probably means you need a portfolio that you know can stand up to anything, right? That you're going to be good no matter what happens. That we can give you more upside, but keep a net underneath you all the time while trimming your costs for the majority of our clients. We're not selling snake oil here. It's just risk management. And if that sounds appealing to you, which I think it should, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. We're going to take a quick break, and right when we come back, we're going to run about 10, 12 minutes of that interview I did with Tony Greer. Think you guys will love it. Remember, at the end of the show, make sure you go download the rest of the interview, especially if you're managing your own money. I think Tony has been dead on it as much as anybody is. I think we can all benefit from listening to him. Anyway, have a great weekend. We'll see you next week, and we'll be back with the Dots on Monday. You're not going to want to miss it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. This is the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com. And like I said, stick with us through the break. Got the interview coming up next, and yeah, we'll be good to go. Listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast, download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
2024 has the potential to be a wild ride. Are you confident your portfolio is protected? Risk management has never been more important. Join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his 2024 Outlook live webinar Thursday, March 28th.
Todd, with the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, and this crazy market volatility, protecting retirement portfolios has never been more critical, and it's our number one focus.
Don't just ride out 2024. Join Zach for his live webinar and learn how they actively manage every portfolio.
We do it with Bulwark's risk management strategy, always seeking opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give you as much upside as possible.
Don't miss Zach's free 2024 Outlook live webinar Thursday, March 28th. Register now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for another of my favorite segments of the show. Love doing it every week, but this is the part of the show that I really enjoy because I get to ask the questions and I get to pick the brains. And a lot of interesting macro moves going on. And when I see a lot of weird stuff, and I'm not saying this just because he's on, but this guy's got a hot hand and he's been really hot. His stuff has always been helpful. But, you know, without further ado, Tony Greer at TG Macro. And Tony, I'm sitting here thinking about it, introducing you, man. You know, in this business, when you're hot, you're hot. And buddy, you've had a hell of a run here. I mean, again, I've subscribed to you for a long time, and it's one of the reasons I do, just because I think your insights and the way you combine macro fundamental and technical analysis and all that kind of stuff, I think it's spot on. I just really don't know, and I'm not pumping sunshine here, man. I was thinking about this driving into the office today. I don't really know anybody that's gotten the big rotational moves more dead on the money than you have over the last couple of years. It's got to feel rewarding because this has been a difficult market, man. So congratulations to you, but walk us through a little bit, and I'm sure you're going to try to be a little bit effusive about this and push it off, but seriously, What have you cued in? What do you think's really helped you understand this picture? Because like I said, man, of all the strategists, you know, it started short tech, long energy, and then you did what I referred to. I remember you and I talking about it. In my opinion, one of the hardest things to do in this business is flipping around on a successful trade and playing the other side. You did that. What's been the secret sauce, man? I know it's a lot of hard work. I know there is no secret sauce, but just kind of what has been your cue? What have you been really watching, and what's helped you really digest a lot of this stuff and get it so much more right than so many others?
Well, Zach, thank you so much for the dazzling introduction. I'm quite honored. I really am honored to be here to talk with you. You're one of my favorite people in finance, and I listen to your podcast all the time. The one with Rudy was absolutely tremendous.
Thank you, man.
Yep. No. So we'll get to the subject matter at hand. I mean, what I try to do every day when I wake up, Zach, is pride myself on, you know, like a hockey player wants to skate to where the puck is going. I want to see where the markets are going and skate with them, you know, so I don't wake up with an idea. CPI was hot. Rates are higher. Therefore, stocks have to go down today, you know, like something like that. There's a perfect example. I don't come in with any preconceptions at all.
Right.
So for example, today we get CPI hotter, rates go higher, and you look at the tech market and it won't budge. And so the answer is, therefore, what is it going to do? It's going to go up. It's one of those things where if you let the market say what it's doing and be open-minded enough to listen, that's a big part of the secret sauce that I think that I've been able to apply. And it's really applying the science a lot more seriously that I've created to watch markets, you know, and it's kind of like over the years of writing the newsletter for the last 7 years, it's like, you know, refining that process of watching the markets the way I do, which is just paying close attention to performance on a daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual basis. And if you study those timeframes sort of like slides over and over again, constantly, when you're looking at the markets and see where things are on the year, on the quarter, on the month, you know, it starts to paint a picture that you can sort of visualize a lot clearer. And that sort of helped me come a long way in markets. So I don't want to steal the floor.
Yeah, no, no. Well, you the floor's here for you, man. Do you think that view professionally, you've helped me out a lot on this because somebody once said a value investor isn't made, they're born, right? Fundamentals and valuation will always be a very important, it's part of how I see the world, and I can't shake myself from it. You have been one of the people, though, that's helped me look at the importance of the other side, meaning, look, the job is to get it right, not to be right, right? And so at the end of the day, the market's the ultimate arbiter, right? And it doesn't really matter what we think. Do you think that is more true today? And I don't want to load this question with my own bias, but do you think that is more true today because of central bank intervention, because of governments running insane deficits, because of all of the, you know, the overactive and over-involved central banks, the infusion of capital at every, do you think that's more important today, or is it the same as it ever was?
I put it this way, Zach, we were in a period where I felt like, you know, markets were really being like centrally planned, you know, back kind of before we broke out of the volatility zone, you know, when volatility was completely compressed, like right before that short VIX product blew up, I guess it was at the end of 18 or something like that. You know, the S&P was having like maybe a 15 handle range during the course of the day, and rates were at zero or around there. And you're like, what is going on here? That's weird. And now, you know, and I don't want to dwell on that. Like, I'm not a conspiracy guy about the markets. I don't think there's anybody that's in control or any, you know, fast forward to today. And I agree, like, we're seeing crazy things go on and markets are unbridled. Markets are doing what the flock they're going to do. I mean, Bitcoin 72K is fine. Gold 2200 is fine. S&P, you know, ripping towards 5,300, all good, you know, led by technology, NVIDIA trading a gazillion times earnings, not a problem, keep going. You know what I mean? Like, the tape is doing what the tape wants. So that's a great market. And it's, you know, you got to recognize that you're riding a bucking Bronco and things can kind of go crazy in all directions. But it's still a bar crawl to me, the way sort of, you know, I've been looking at this rally, and especially with my good friend Nick, we have identified this as a bar crawl where, you know, you can play your breakouts, but if you stay in one sector for too long and overstay your welcome, like any one bar during a bar crawl, you're going to get knocked out, right? Because because the trends aren't just extrapolated forever. They're explosive breakouts and there's a move, and then that's probably it. You know, it's a bunch of short covering and it sends the sector 10%. And, you know, maybe that turns it into a, you know, better looking chart, but sort of that was the move that you wanted to catch. You know, and then we've got the case where technology is trending now, which is kind of fun. And, you know, to me, it's a carbon copy of the 94, 95 analog. And I don't know if I've gone through that with you, but I look at last year, like, hang on, I just want to get, it was 94, where in 1994, we raised rates from 3% to 6% to address an overheating economy and a little bit of inflation, right? Yeah. Stock market down 1.5% in a super volatile year. That to me was last year, right? That to me was 2023. 1995, 1996, 1997, 1998, as you remember, stocks were straight up. Fed funds were in a range of 5.5% down to 4.5%, basically like a 1.5% range for that 4 or 5 year period. And the stock market freaking loved it, right? We had tech tailwinds. We had Amazon. We had, you know, the iTunes craze, Sun Microsystems, Cisco, like, you know, the networking explosion, all of that. And the thing, markets went berserk for 5 years, you know what I mean? 95, 96, 97, right into 99. And it feels similar to me. Last year, we had the volatile year in stocks where we did nothing but raise rates, but we found the peak last year, which was the most important thing. And then we got the signal on November 14th that the bond market was no longer concerned about CPI being overheated for the moment. Stocks exploded through resistance levels in November, and they're still following through now.
Yeah.
So
it's funny because you hit on something that I had on my hit list to talk to you this morning. And now I'll preface this with saying on the fundamental side, it makes sense to me that this is sort of a byproduct of, you know, running 7% deficits to GDP and doing all the crazy stuff that we're doing. But at the same time, I don't want to jump to that conclusion, right? Again, my fundamental bias can shine through, and like you and I both know, markets can stay insolvent a lot, or can stay irrational a lot longer than you can stay solvent. But one of the things I had written on here is, it seems to me that we're in a market, and I think you alluded to this, where there really aren't crashes. There's just sector rotations. That's what my note says, right? Meaning, is that a product of the fact that the market knows that the liquidity, remember we talked about, when's the Fed going to pull away the punch bowl, right? Mm-hmm. It's a punch pool now, and we're swimming in it. It ain't going anywhere. Is that what this market's sniffing out?
A little bit. I think it could be a little bit of that.
All right, guys. Due to time constraints, we got to shut the interview off right there. But if you want to listen to the rest of it, just go Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on all that stuff. So you can hear the rest of Tony's interview, which I sincerely hope you do. You're not going to want to miss it. Anyway, we'll see you next week. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.